Picture this, a poor Scottish immigrant boy who became the world's richest man, then gave it all away. Andrew Carnegie's life reads like fiction, yet his impact on business and philanthropy remains profoundly real today. His autobiography, published posthumously in 1920, and his famous essay, The Gospel of Wealth, reveal a man who believed wealth carried moral responsibility. Carnegie's philosophy that the man who dies rich dies disgraced continues to inspire modern billionaires like Warren Buffett, Bill Gates, and Mackenzie Scott. What makes his story so compelling isn't just his accumulation of wealth, it's his thoughtful reflection on its purpose. In an age of growing inequality, Carnegie's journey from poverty to purpose offers timeless insights about success, responsibility, and legacy. The cobblestone streets at Dunfermline, Scotland, shaped Carnegie profoundly. Born to a family of weavers and political radicals, Andrew absorbed passionate discussions about equality and disdain for aristocratic privilege. His family even kept a hidden flag symbolizing their radical convictions. Despite modest means, the Carnegie household buzzed with intellectual stimulation. Uncle Lauder sparked Andrew's imagination with tales of Scottish heroes, instilling a fierce sense of possibility. Arriving in Pittsburgh in 1848 at 13, Andrew faced the harsh realities of immigrant life. With his father struggling to find work, Carnegie became the main breadwinner of the family at age 14, working as a bobbin boy for $1.20 weekly. "I cannot tell you how proud I was when I received my first week's own earnings," he recalled. What distinguished Carnegie was his hunger for self-improvement. When offered a telegraph messenger position, he seized it as a gateway to advancement. While other messengers played checkers between deliveries, he practiced the telegraph key and memorized city streets. This diligence earned him promotion to telegraph operator at 16. These early experiences cemented Carnegie's belief that America offered unprecedented opportunity to the hardworking, a conviction that would later complicate his views on wealth inequality and social mobility. Carnegie transformed through Colonel James Anderson's personal library, which opened to working boys on Saturdays. There was no use to which money could be applied so productive of good as the founding of a public library, he later reflected. This access became his university, as he devoured Shakespeare, Macaulay, and Bancroft while honing rhetorical skills through Webster Literary Society debates. At 18, Carnegie impressed Thomas Scott of the Pennsylvania Railroad, becoming his personal assistant and finding his first important mentor. During a crisis, Carnegie boldly issued train orders under Scott's name, effectively managing the situation. "This position was the beginning of my successful career," he later noted. His entrepreneurial instincts emerged when he recognized the potential of T.T. Woodruff's sleeping car invention. Despite limited capital, he convinced Pittsburgh investors to join the venture, which quickly became profitable and directed him toward opportunities in bridges, oil, and eventually steel. Carnegie distinguished himself through systematic business growth and vertical integration, controlling multiple production stages by investing in iron manufacturing when his bridge company needed reliable supplies, and establishing his own facilities when supplier quality faltered. His transition from iron to steel represents his most visionary decision. While competitors remained committed to iron, Carnegie recognized the Bessemer process would revolutionize construction. "The day of iron has passed." He embraced scientific methods in an era of manufacturing tradition, replacing veteran iron masters with managers willing to apply scientific principles and employing chemists to analyze materials. "The Lucy furnace became the most profitable branch of our business," Carnegie noted, attributing this success to chemistry eliminating guesswork. The founding of the Edgar Thomson Steelworks in 1875 marked Carnegie's full commitment to steel production. Despite the financial panic creating economic turmoil, his prudent financial management enabled the enterprise to survive. By controlling raw material sources and embracing technological innovation, Carnegie Steel produced steel for $11.50 per ton when competitors' costs reached $28, allowing him to dominate markets even during economic downturns. This scientific approach yielded surprising discoveries. Ores previously dismissed as inferior proved superior under analysis, while supposedly premium materials often contained hidden flaws. Through precise standards and detailed records, Carnegie's operations achieved consistency and efficiency unmatched by competitors. By 1900, Carnegie Steel controlled an entire supply chain from raw materials to distribution, becoming the world's most efficient producer. His data-driven manufacturing emphasized continuous improvement through measurement and analysis, with heavy investment in R&D as essential to market leadership. Carnegie pioneered modern organizational methods with management structures coordinating operations across multiple facilities. He selected managers based on performance rather than background, willingly delegating authority to technical experts like Captain Bill Jones at the Edgar Thomson Works, a progressive approach when many industrialists insisted on controlling everything personally. As Carnegie amassed his fortune, he wrestled with wealth's purpose, culminating in his influential essay, The Gospel of Wealth. He identified wealth administration as his era's central challenge, recognizing that industrial revolution created inequality threatened social stability. Carnegie rejected both leaving fortunes to heirs and socialist redistribution. Instead, he proposed the wealthy serve as trustees of their fortunes, using them for public benefit during their lifetimes. His dictum, "The man who dies rich dies disgraced," challenged the wealthy to direct their fortunes toward worthy causes. He distinguished between mere charity and meaningful giving, advocating investments that enabled self-improvement, particularly through education and cultural enrichment. Not what to give, but how to give became his principle, emphasizing strategic philanthropy, addressing root causes rather than symptoms. This philosophy charted a middle path between unfettered capitalism and socialism, acknowledging capitalism's productive power while imposing moral obligations on its beneficiaries. Carnegie's approach has shaped modern philanthropy, from the Rockefeller Foundation to the Gates Foundation and the Giving Pledge, influencing today's billionaires who commit to giving away most of their wealth. Andrew Carnegie's death in 1919 marked the end of an extraordinary life, but the beginning of his most enduring legacy. Having given away approximately $350 million, billions in today's dollars, he transformed American philanthropy through over 2,500 public libraries, universities, scientific research funding, and pension funds, reflecting his belief that philanthropy should be both systematic and personal. The Carnegie Effect established a template for modern philanthropy by focusing on root causes rather than symptoms and emphasizing self-improvement over dependency. His library grants required communities to maintain the facilities with free access for all citizens, democratizing knowledge before universal public education existed. Carnegie's legacy includes contradictions, mirroring broader tensions in American capitalism. The efficiency-driven businessman who broke unions also advocated for workers' dignity and social responsibility. Perhaps his most profound legacy is demonstrating that wealth can be a means rather than an end. Surplus wealth is a sacred trust, which its possessor is bound to administer in his lifetime for the good of the community, he wrote. In our world of growing inequality, Carnegie reminds us that true success isn't measured by what we accumulate, but by what we contribute. What will your legacy be?